Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And, Jim, we begin with the good martini, which is jumping off from yesterday's bad martini. Most folks, hopefully, were with us yesterday. But if you weren't, our bad martini was Hillary Clinton over in India giving a tortured explanation of why she lost the 2016 presidential election. We played two clips, one of which was an extended clip about how white married women decided not to vote for her because they were listening to their husbands and bosses and sons, and then they were going to defy their husbands, but then Jim Comey came out, and so then they obeyed again. And then the other one that's getting more attention is Hillary Clinton comparing the people in the red states to people in the blue states. Listen again.
If you look at the map of the United States, there's all that red in the middle where Trump won. I win the coasts, I win, you know, Illinois and Minnesota, places like that. But what the map doesn't show you is that I won the places that represent two-thirds of America's gross domestic product. So I won the places that are optimistic, diverse, dynamic, moving forward. And his whole campaign, Make America Great Again, was looking backwards. You know, you didn't like black people getting rights. You don't like women, you know, getting jobs. You don't want to, you know, see that Indian American succeeding more than you are. Whatever your problem is, I'm going to solve it.
Well, Jim, those comments are not only offensive to people like us, they're a big problem to people running for re-election as Democrats in red states and don't particularly like to call their constituents backwards, racist, and misogynist. So some of these Democrats are actually fighting back. Claire McCaskill in Missouri telling the Washington Post that Clinton's comments were fighting words to her as a Missourian. Quote, "Those are kind of fighting words for me because I'm partial to Missouri voters. I think they were expressing their frustration with the status quo. I may not have agreed with their choice, but I certainly respect them, and I don't think that's the way you should talk about any voter, especially ones in my state." Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown, his state also carried by Trump, said that he doesn't really care about Clinton saying things unhelpful to the party, saying, "I don't really care what she said," to the Huffington Post, "but I just think that's not helpful." Former Clinton aides pointed out that her comments are forcing Democrats all over the country to scramble to distance themselves from her, according to the Washington Free Beacon. This is from The Hill now. "She put herself in a position where Democrats from states that Trump won will have to distance themselves from her even more. A 2016 Clinton surrogate who is unnamed says, she's annoying me. She's annoying everyone as far as I can tell. Who lets her say these things?" Jim, it'd be interesting to see if Hillary Clinton was still an active force in the party, whether she was planning to run again and people wanted to stay on her good side in the Democratic Party, whether their reaction would be a little more muted. But what do you make of these red state Democrats flying to the microphones to make sure that their voters don't think they agree with Hillary?
As much as we have given Hillary Clinton lots and lots of grief over the years, Greg, we should give, you know, I, for one, am very happy that she's finally returning to her first love, which is giving lucrative speeches in private venues. That's really what she's best at. Spent a lot of time and effort doing that sort of thing in her years between Secretary of State and being presidential candidate. So good for her, you know, getting back up on the horse and doing what she loves so much. A little more seriously, if Hillary Clinton was more self-aware, not only would she not say all of the comments she said in India, she would kind of recognize that right now she's a liability for the party. There are plenty of people in the Democratic Party who see her as a person who lost, certainly the most devastating loss for the party in recent memory, maybe in history. I think we can all kind of agree that Donald Trump was a far from ideal candidate for the Republicans. The campaign of Hillary Clinton was wildly overconfident and, in fact, deeply out of touch about how it was actually performing. There are lefties in the party who are upset with her. There are centrists in the party who are upset with her. The best thing possible for Democrats is that Hillary Clinton either walks forever in the woods of Chappaqua, or she travels abroad, or she does something and she just stays out of the spotlight for between now and November 2018. She doesn't apparently seem to be able to do that. And I think she feels that she's got some sort of deep stake, not deep state, in changing the narrative that the loss was her fault, reflected on her as a candidate, reflected on her management of the campaign and everyone around her being oblivious to how unpopular she really was, and that she feels this need to constantly come out and periodically remind people that really, if she lost, she didn't. I mean, ultimately, Greg, this is like one of the most wonderful sour grapes comments of all time. I didn't want to win all those states because they're full of losers, because they're full of angry, hateful people. They're full of misogynists, right? I don't. Those states are just they stink. They're sour. I don't want to have anything to do with that at a time when a whole bunch of, you know, Democratic senators are trying to win re-election here. She won't do that. And so my suspicion is that you're going to see, I wouldn't even say it's necessarily a civil war within the party, because I don't think there are that many Democrats who are that emotionally invested in defending the narrative of Hillary the saint. Hillary, the candidate who did everything right and who was failed by a terrible racist American people who 4 years ago earlier had voted to reelect Barack Obama. The thing is, my suspicion, the good news that comes out of this is that she's not going to go away. Even if the party wants her to, I think her own ego won't let her go away. And of course, it gives, you know, it divides the Democrats and gives Republicans something to talk about, which is, you know, much easier to talk about than, say, you know, losing a what should have been a very winnable race in Western Pennsylvania last night.
No, that's absolutely correct. Two quick thoughts on this. First of all, in addition to, I'm sure, being thrilled that Hillary's halfway around the world, just imagining Bill Clinton's reaction to this, given his ability to marshal an argument in a way that doesn't turn off so many people, and Hillary's complete inability to do the same, has just got to be absolutely maddening for him, given all that he's invested lately in trying to help her become president and obviously not getting there. Secondly, Jim, given how much it was the Democratic I Am Woman, Hear Me Roar campaign of 2016, I'm guessing there's probably some pretty good clips of Claire McCaskill fawning all over Hillary Clinton from a couple of years ago. Might make some for some good advertising, despite Claire McCaskill's outrage right now.
Yeah, I want to say, Greg, I remember her. I want to say she was on the Obama side of the Hillary-Obama fight of 2008. And so she endorsed Hillary for president really, really early. And I seem to remember, this is, you know, one of those things where I wish I'd looked it up. McCaskill and Hillary did not necessarily get along terribly well. So on the one hand, maybe for McCaskill, this is an easier rebuke than for everybody else. But again, this is a, if you're Claire McCaskill, you know, this is the sort of thing that could be run an ad against you just to remind Missouri voters how much Hillary Clinton looks down on them. And chances are they're going to go into the voting place and be in a mood to vote for Republicans. Because they're, you know, mad as heck about the Democrats being a bunch of snobs who look down on them. This is a very simple, direct message of, you know, the opposition looks down on you. The opposition thinks they're better than you. Look, you can, you know, win that in a lot of places in 2018, even in a tough environment.
Absolutely. All right, let's move on to the bad martini now. And as we mentioned yesterday, a little bit of shuffle at some pretty critical positions in the Trump administration. Rex Tillerson soon will be out as Secretary of State, CIA Director Mike Pompeo taking his spot, and Trump is nominating the Deputy CIA Director, Gina Haspel, to take Pompeo's spot once he leaves Langley. But there could be a problem for Haspel's nomination. Here's hot air. Gina Haspel's an old pro with decades of experience at the agency, much of it undercover, per the New York Times. Seems like she'd be a popular pick inside the building at Langley. Outside the building, though, the left is gearing up to torpedo her during confirmation. Why would they want to bork the would-be first woman director in CIA history? Here's what the Times says. The CIA's first overseas detention site was in Thailand. It was run by Ms. Haspel, who oversaw the brutal interrogations, New York Times words, of two detainees, Abu Zubaydah and Abd al-Rahim al-Nashiri. Mr. Zubaydah alone was waterboarded 83 times in a single month, had his head repeatedly slammed into walls, and endured other harsh methods before interrogators decided he had no useful information to provide. The sessions were videotaped and the recordings stored in a safe at the CIA station in Thailand until 2005, when they were ordered destroyed. By then, Ms. Haspel was serving at CIA headquarters, and it was her name that was on the cable carrying the destruction orders. So we're back to the debate from last decade about enhanced interrogation, considered torture by some people, including some Republicans, Jim. And when we see most Democrats lined up against pretty much any Trump nominee in a 51-49 Senate, you can only afford one defection. If John McCain's not there, you can't afford any. And McCain has already tweeted out that he is very concerned about this because it was a disgraceful program, the enhanced interrogation. Rand Paul is also believed to be disinclined to support this nomination, which if that's the case, then this nomination is in deep, deep trouble. What do you make of it?
By the way, Greg, I assume Thad Cochran goes ahead with his plan to resign on April 1st. Then you'd have to wait until his replacement is in, sworn in, giving you another window in which there's one less Republican senator in the Senate. You know, I remember having this when the Democrats were really haranguing the heck out of the DHS Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen over what she'd heard in the infamous S-word hole comments of Trump. They wanted her to say something, say that Trump had said it. Trump had denied saying it. If she had, you know, contradicted the president, Trump probably would have fired her in a fit of rage. And then we would have needed a new DHS secretary. My attitude towards Democrats, my advice for Democrats in the Senate, not that they're taking it, would be, look, if Trump puts up someone who's competent, if Trump puts up someone who's qualified, confirm him. Put him in there. Get him in there because you want as many qualified, competent people in the federal government as possible. We're already hearing troubles of Ben Carson and the expenditures at the Department of Housing and Urban Development. We saw Steve Bannon, who had run Breitbart.com in a position of special advisor, who, of course, the president turned on very quickly once Bannon had criticized him. You don't really know what you're going to get from the Trump administration. So if you get a nominee who isn't dragging their knuckles or you know, the worst possible option, confirm them. Get them in there. This is not a time to be picky about the people, particularly if a position as important as CIA director. Basically, everyone is saying this woman is as an exemplary career within the agency, widely respected, a variety of roles, been deputy for the past year. Look, you want somebody like this as a director of the CIA. You don't want to have an empty slot there for a long stretch. This is not a time to get up on your high horse about policies that go back 14, 15 years ago. I'm not surprised Rand Paul is going to do this. This is Rand Paul. This is the way he is. There are days we love him, days we can't stand him. You know, of course he's gonna be the fly in the ointment. He's gonna, you know, disrupt that. McCain, I can understand where he's coming from on the importance of the issue of what he perceives as torture, and policies going back in the Bush administration. But really, we want competent people in our government. This is not the right time to start, you know, making some sort of stand where you try to knock off somebody in order to send a message to the Trump administration or something like that. Because there's no guarantee that if you knock off this nominee, you'll like the next one any better. We have a government where there's still a ton of vacancies at high-level positions. And this is not the way the U.S. government is supposed to operate. The Trump administration is, you know, slow, glacial pace enough when it comes to making nominations. Unless, you know, we've seen some really terrible ones, folks who didn't know enough about the jobs they were stepping into. We never called the Obama administration nominating some ambassadors who didn't know much about the countries they were going to represent the United States in. Look, if you've got somebody competent, senators, confirm them. Just send them along. This is not the time to demand agreement on every particular policy, including a policy which there's now a bipartisan consensus to not waterboard. You know, to be perfectly honest, my suspicion is that her previous operations in the waterboarding program is probably what made Trump pick her. If you have this in Trump's mind, and we've all heard Trump talking about all the different things he would do to terrorists because he thinks waterboarding is too nice to these people. Look, this means she has credibility in his eyes. This means she is a tough gal in his eyes, which makes him a little more likely to listen to her, which is the sort of thing you should want if you really think Trump is as bad as Democrats say he is. So this is just the wrong time for the Democrats to unify in opposition to an otherwise really highly rated, highly regarded nominee. It would be a shame to see one of Trump's wiser picks go down because of a dispute going back 14, 15 years.
All right, let's move on to our crazy martini now. And Jim, as we foreshadowed yesterday, today's National School Walkout Day. In fact, it's already happened. It happened at 10 o'clock this morning, lasted for 17 minutes in honor of the 17 killed in Florida a month ago today. It's all about gun control. And of course, many of the liberal school administrators around the country just thought this was great. And now it's gone even farther. This is courtesy of the New Haven Register. If you were watching MTV, BET, Nickelodeon, Paramount Network, Comedy Central, TV Land, or CMT when the channel went dark at 10 a.m. in all time zones Wednesday, you shouldn't be alarmed. Your regularly scheduled programming is set to continue in 17 minutes. Why? All Viacom-owned networks and platforms paused at that time to honor the 17 lives lost in the school shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida last month. According to the company, it's a show of solidarity to coincide with the National School Walkout on Wednesday, a movement in which students and teachers all across the country will leave their classrooms for 17 minutes to pay tribute to the victims of gun violence and show Congress their demand for stricter gun control laws. MTV is also handing over control of its social media account to students across the country during the walkout. And I'm sure, Jim, they'll have a wide diversity of opinion on the gun issue of those students that they hand the issue over to. So MTV, of course, has been championing liberal causes pretty much since at least the early 90s, if not longer than that. But as you pointed out in our email conversation, too, do we really need to interrupt Bubble Guppies on Nickelodeon in order to have 17 minutes of blackout for a gun control push?
You know, Greg, if they decided to interrupt Bubble Guppies because Bubble Guppies, it's insufferable, I could live with that. I would understand it because let me put it this way. I've seen episodes of Bubble Guppies when my sons were younger. And all of the little, you know, they're basically Bubble Guppy is like little mermaid, mermen people who are swimming around and have, you know, age-appropriate preschool programming adventures in which they needed to, they all needed to be firemen, Greg, and put out the fire. They're underwater. There's water all around them. Why are they going to a fire truck? Why are they going to a fire hose? It's as if they totally forgot that all the characters are underwater. SpongeBob SquarePants doesn't make those mistakes, let me tell you. But anyway, but aside from the separate question of the quality of Bubble Guppies, Greg, who watches Nickelodeon and Nick Jr. during the day?
Children, tiny children.
Right, right. Preschoolers, right? You're not even in kindergarten at that point, right? You know, kids are five and over or so are basically in school and they'd be subjected to it. No, by the way, as of this morning, still a lot of cranky pro-gun control parents in Authenticity Woods not happy about this because they've got kindergartners, first graders, second graders, kids who are a little young to get into this involved in the issue of guns. And you probably don't even want to tell your kids about school shootings. You don't want them to have nightmares. You don't want them to be too frightened or afraid that it's going to happen in their school. Look, if this was just happening at the nation's high schools, I think most of us would be a little less grinding our teeth over it or something like that. But this Nickelodeon and Nick Jr., this is toddlers. What do you want them to do? You know, run for Congress? Come on. This is one of those things. Where, and if they had said, okay, we're doing it on MTV. Okay, I'm sure there are a bunch of, you know, slackers sitting on their couches watching MTV during the day instead of going to work. Or maybe they work nights or something like that. Fine. You want to go blank for 17 minutes? Go ahead. Be my guest. But, you know, Nickelodeon, Nick Jr., come on. Now it's just turned into this like this ridiculous desire to demonstrate solidarity, to demonstrate you're with them, even in ways that don't make any particular sense. And you can only imagine how many parents had toddlers this morning whose the toddlers were insisting the TV was broken because it wasn't showing the program and instead was showing the screen saying that they stand with the kids. Greg, I feel like millions of toddlers all at once whined in unison this morning. And a million parents groaned and clicked through the channels trying to find something age-appropriate in the meantime.
Wow. Wow. Well, you know, Paw Patrol could be a possible solution here because you got...
Oh, sure. You support the police brutality of Paw Patrol, Greg. Of course you would. They chew on bones. And we all know what that's supposed to be. Symbolism of minorities, Greg. Paw Patrol is the most pro-police propaganda I've seen since Sledgehammer.
Oh, that was another great show. I'm telling you, Chase and Marshall, they're good first responders. Perhaps better than other first responders we've seen lately.
No hesitation to go in guns blazing in that case. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Happy Wednesday, everybody.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Thursday for the next Three Martini Lunch.